All right, you are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 8:59. Coming up next is Veterans Voice. I would like to let you know that you can follow KBOO on Twitter and join in on conversations and up-to-the-minute updates on special programs. Just search for KBOO online on your favorite Twitter app to find us. Learn about station news, find out about recommended events, and see what we're talking about, whether it be news, interviews, or music. Stay tuned for Veterans Voice.
Are not looking for enemies behind every door. Are not looking for people to kill or to maim. The soldiers of peace are just changing the game. Fighting for all of our lives, are now fighting for children, for homes and for wives. Fighting for the memory of all who fell before. But the soldiers of peace just can't kill anymore. Can still hear the cries when the people were screaming, losing their lives, when bodies were broken and spirits were torn. But the soldiers of peace do not want you
Welcome to Veterans Voice Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland and Northwest Oregon, 91.9 FM Hood River and the Columbia River Gorge, plus 104.3 FM in Corvallis and the Willamette Valley. You can hear this station on the World Wide Web at kboo.fm. And if you want to hear some of our earlier shows, you can go to kboo.fm/Veterans Voice. I'm Marvin, and Angie's not here today. So this is, you know, this is going to be the second time in 25 years I've had to do the show by myself. So put up with me, okay? Today our guest is going to be Hector Barajas of the Deported Veterans Support House. And before we talk to Hector, and I'm really looking forward to this, is I got one announcement to make. No more U.S. wars in Iraq and Libya. 13 years into one war, 5 years into another, 750 weeks after Portland's first weekly Friday rally in March. Friday, March 18th, from 5 to 6 p.m. in Pioneer Courthouse Square, Southwest Yamhill and Broadway. And that's Peace and Justice Works, Iraqi Affinity Group. Downtown at Pioneer Courthouse Square today at 5 o'clock, 5 to 6, and I'm going to, after we talk to Hector, I'm going to read something. I've never really done this before on this show. I'm going to read an article. It's called "Vietnam Era Women Veterans: The Unknown Trauma." It's from the DAV, Department of Disabled American Veterans Magazine. And it's a really good article on women veterans that I want to read to you. And the other little thing I got for us is about Bergdahl, the soldier that left his post in the Middle East and was a POW for 5 years before he was released. I want to talk a little bit about him before. Like I said, we're going to talk with Hector Barajas of Deported Veterans Support House. And I've heard a lot about this, and I've been reading up on it for a while and really interested in this subject because I remember when I was in the service that they offered guys, American citizenship, if they would go into the military, and a lot of them went to Vietnam, and a lot of them came back, and they never got their citizenship. So I'm really interested in what's going on with these guys and women. I suppose women veterans now, because there wasn't very many women in the military when I was in the military. Hector, good morning. Oh, we lost him. I guess she's going to call him back.
I can still hear you guys.
Oh, are you there?
Yes.
Oh, hey, buddy. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Have a good morning.
Oh, you too, Hector. I'm really interested in this. Could you, first of all, I read about your military service. Could you tell the listeners about your service?
Sure. I served from 1995 to 2001 with an honorable discharge. I served with the 82nd Airborne for about 3 years, and then I re-enlisted and ended up in El Paso, Texas, or Fort Bliss, rather, in William Beaumont Army Medical Center. So that's pretty much in a nutshell my service. And, well, it was one of the best times that in my life, because, you know, it was exciting to be a soldier and to wear the uniform, you know, very proud of that.
Yeah, you bet. So tell me a little bit, you know, like I was saying, I remember when I was in, this was back in 67, I remember they had us all in this big building, and they got up front and said, anybody that's not a citizen of the United States, and even if you're drafted or you enlisted, and you go to Vietnam, when you come back, you will get your citizenship.
And so what happens is that there's a lot of misinformation, really, on the military, and, you know, because they didn't educate the people that were non-citizens about citizenship, or they didn't have any program. I don't think everybody was ever even counseled to make sure that, you know, hey, you know that you could get your citizenship. This is the process. So what happens is the military dropped the ball. And also, the soldier did not check to see if, you know, hey, I need to work on my citizenship. So those two things unfortunately happened. And as the military has progressed over the years, they are doing a better job. But back in the 60s, you know, and 70s, they, you know, it was... I don't think they were really good at that. Most of the men that are being deported are from the Vietnam era.
Yeah, really. And how did you know any guys that when you were in the service that were promised that they would get their citizenship if they joined the military?
You know what? When I was in, I thought I didn't. That never came up.
Really?
I just assumed we were all soldiers, and citizenship wasn't even like on my my sights, and it was never brought up in my chain of command. I never saw one ceremony of citizenship, so it really wasn't something that, you know, I thought about, you know, until really the only time until this situation happened to me. And what I do see nowadays is a lot of mass swear-ins and you know, and guys in Iraq and Afghanistan and back home. So, but no, I never. I probably thought I was maybe the only one. I'm pretty sure there were more, but it never, you know, it was never an issue. Never even thought about it.
Nobody in your units, the units you were in, never thought of that at all, huh? That they would.
Nobody ever thought about it, and I didn't know anybody else that was, like I said, it wasn't like, okay, well, we're going to counsel all the green card soldiers, or this guy got sworn in. I never saw any of that.
Wow, that's really interesting. That's really interesting.
I think it might vary from unit to unit, you know, because I've heard of guys, hey, we took care of our guys, and, you know, I think it's probably the chain of command that was there, and maybe the individual that decided, hey, I'm going to, but it wasn't like something that was, okay, we're going to, this month we're going to, you know, make sure that all these green card soldiers apply for citizenship, and we're going to, you know, swear them in.
Yeah. Let me ask you about, I read about it, but I know the listeners want. Tell us about the Deported Veterans Support House. What does it do? Where's it located? Is it a location?
A house where we house men. It's a shelter. You know, we provide the house, the roof over their head. But also, we try to do more than that. We have counselors that come in. We have we're working the legal part of it. We recently connected with the ACLU, and we're some of the men are actually getting their cases looked into. One guy is actually already went over to the border, and he had his fingerprints done for citizenship. I got an attorney through the ACLU as well, so we're starting to see those kind of things, and we're identifying and keeping a database of deported veterans around the world, because we have men deported to many countries in Europe and South America and Africa and stuff like that. We're more like an operations center. Initially, it's just like, okay, we're going to house them in, but we'd like to think we have a vision, and we try to do more than just, you know, hey, we're going to house them and that's it. And it eventually became like an operation center for all these guys.
Wow. So where is it located?
I'm calling you from Baja, California.
From Baja.
In Tijuana, and we are about 15 minutes away from the United States.
So how many guys, you know, worldwide, you say you're doing a database now on these guys. How many guys do you think there are that were deported after serving in the military?
There's probably going to be thousands. Right now, we're connected with veterans being deported or deported to 30 different countries. So we're almost sure it's going to be in the thousands. We just don't know how many, because veterans have been deported since 1996, and then there's a couple of cases, you know, way before that. We just, there's no way to really tell, because, unfortunately, Homeland Security wasn't under their radar. When you go through immigration, they don't ask you whether you're a veteran or not.
Right.
So very hard to keep those.
Yeah. Statistics. Yeah, it would be really, really hard. Do most of the You know, that's where I get confused, Hector, is the, you know, I've read a lot about it and everything, and I'm really angry that these guys are getting deported, you know, after serving, especially these guys going to the war. What are most of them, are they deported after they get out of the military?
So what happens is, and it's very important people know, is because, you know, we definitely want to be upfront about everything, and people exactly know what they're supporting.
Right.
So most veterans, they join with a green card, don't get their citizenship while they're in. They get out of the military either with an honorable discharge or some with a dishonorable. And they get into some type of legal trouble. It could be from a bad check to a possession to you might even have a guy that, that gets caught with, you know, stuff that where they're trying to distribute. So it varies from case to case. You know, I can't tell you that, you know, most of these guys have domestic violence. It's so many different things.
Right.
But, you know, you could be deported for a bad check, you know, for DUIs, those kind of things. And some of this stuff is not saying that it's an excuse, but some of these guys suffer from PTSD, and the reason that they're getting in trouble is because of the issues that they have. They don't know how to cope with it, so they drink. Drinking might lead into DUI, it might lead into a bar fight, and, you know, and then you get a bodily harm to somebody, charged. So those kind of things happen, and they do their time. You know, at the end of the day, they do their time. They're not saying, okay, well, we're going to deport you, and you're not going to do any time. They finish their prison sentence, and they get deported.
Right. So they get deported, but they do their time. Then they get deported, but they didn't. Did any of these guys try to get their citizenship when they got out of the service? What happened?
So, you know, it goes back again. There, you know, a lot of these guys were misinformed. There are some that try to get their citizenship, and then they, you know, they changed their address. They were denied for some reason. So those are the kind of things that the ACLU is looking into because, with USCIS, that there might be a possibility to make sure, you know, for the men that did file at one point and didn't, you know, before they caught a felony, to try to make it retroactive, like these guys should have been citizens before they
got it.
So that's something that it's being looked at into, but not, you know, it's not concrete yet. And then the other thing is that there were two presidential orders that came down, executive orders, one from President Clinton and one from George Bush, that citizenship should have been expedited by the military, you know, if they, you know, after, you know, those executive orders came down. But there's no paper trail that the military did their part. So, like, at the very least, you should have counted these guys.
Right.
Or the S4 or whoever was doing all the paperwork, they should have counseled these guys and had them sign some kind of form or agreement. You know what, this is the process. If you want to do it, if you don't, then, you know, you're pretty much on your own. But that's something that wasn't ever done. So maybe, you know, there's a way to fix that wrong.
Yeah. Let me ask you about some of these guys have got to have disability from the military, these guys that were wounded. And whatever, they have to be able to, they probably have some kind of disability through the VA system. If they're deported into Mexico or wherever, you know, how they can get that help. And how do they deal with that?
So one of the things that happens is when you know, there's a lot of people that live abroad, a lot of veterans that live abroad, and they end up going through the foreign medical program with the VA, but it's very specific to the service connected injuries. You know, so if you are rated for back and knees, that's all you're going to be able to get seen for first, as opposed to in the VA once you've been rated. From my understanding, and I don't, I'm not sure, but you can pretty much go in for like even a common cold.
Yeah, you can.
You know.
You can.
Taken care of.
You can.
Exactly.
So these,
it's limited.
Very limited. Yeah, because I know when I go to visit Vietnam, the only thing that they'll take care of me when I'm over there is to my disabilities from the service. That's all they do. But these guys, it seems to me that they're not getting, because you know and I know that if they were in Iraq or Afghanistan, they have PTSD. There's just no doubt about it. And they're not getting any help for that. That's what.
Well, yeah, and there's no there's no treatment. There's no, you know, the VA has, experts and people that have experience with working with these veterans with PTSD in these other countries where they're being deported to. They don't have that.
They don't have any of that. So these guys are going untreated, and probably, like you said earlier, Hector, is some of the problems they got into is because of their PTSD. There's just no doubt about it. And then they're getting into this trouble, and they're getting deported, and they served them, you know, they served this country, and they were promised citizenship, and that's just really unfair to those men. I don't know if there's any women.
Well, you know, interesting enough, there's women, and I can't get into details about their situation, but there are, you know, if it's bad enough for the men, imagine how bad it can be.
I cannot imagine. Can you imagine just how hard it is for these women to get any kind of care, if they get deported?
And then you're to a country that you've probably never lived in or known. And it's difficult for a man. It can be a lot more difficult for the women.
Oh, I can just imagine. I want to talk just a little bit before we let you go, a little bit about the Veterans Support House. How do you guys fund yourself?
So the last couple of years, it's been, month to month. Basically me sending messages to people that I serve with or friends, family, and people in my work over the years, and that's how it's been through, PayPal or GoFundMe.
Right.
And in the last 2 months, we actually, in these following two months, we have a couple fundraisers planned, and there's some people in L.A. and San Diego, and it looks like we're going to have a budget, and it's very hard to focus on the mission when you don't have a budget.
Yeah, when you're...
Nonprofits, they're or charities, everybody can have a good idea and you can have the best intentions in the world, but unfortunately the money, everything revolves around money, and you can't buy things, you can't do things without having...
Yeah, it's really... What I want you to do is... You got my email yesterday, didn't you? I sent you the email saying we're going to call you.
I don't see it, but if you guys could send me another
email. Yeah, I'll send you another email, and you send me the information, how to get a hold of you if people want to help you guys out, and I'll put the word out to the veterans community up here, and we'll get you some help that way. And because I think this is just really unfair, Hector. It is so unfair what they're doing to these veterans after serving their country like they did, and to just kick them out and not getting them any help at all, especially with the PTSD. That is just so horrible. It just makes me so angry, buddy, that they're doing that to those guys. It's just unfair.
At the end of the day, when we die, I have a life deportation. When I die, I'm going to be buried as an American. They're going to take my body across, and it's even worse. How are you going to honor me and my family when I die, and then say, thank you for your service?
No. Yeah, thank you for your service when you're gone, and they got to take you across the border to put you in a veterans hospital.
I get buried in Arlington West if they have space for me,
Yeah, yeah. Man, it's just... Hector, I want to tell you something. I think you're doing really, really, really good work, and I'm going to put the word out, and I'm going to also put some stuff on the internet for you, and I'll talk to a lot of the veterans around here that listen to the show and see if we can get some help, because what you're doing is really good, buddy. I really think you're doing a great job.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay. I'll talk to you later, pal.
Okay. Okay, have a good one. Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, bye. That was Hector with the Deported Veterans Support House down in Baja, California. And I was just thinking how unfair that, you know, I've been reading about this for quite a while, and I'd heard Angie and I talked about, you know, talking to Hector for a while and seeing what, you know, what was going on. And you know, these guys, you know, they come, a lot of them, like Hector was saying, they came over here as kids, you know, their parents brought them over and they know nothing about where they grew up really. And they go into the service and they serve their country, and a lot of them got wounded, and a lot of them, you know, have PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, and they get sent back and they don't get any of their benefits like they're supposed to, like their medical care. They're not getting any mental health care, dental care, vision. If these guys, you know, a lot of these guys that are wounded, they have 100% disability through the Veterans Administration, and they're down there and they're not getting anything, you know? It doesn't sound like they're getting any of the money that they're supposed to get for their disability through the VA. And that's just not fair, you know? I mean, I don't support these guys going off to a war because I haven't supported the wars that they've been in, but, you know, they deserve to get taken care of. They sure deserve to be taken care of. And then they turn to get their backs, get, you know, their backs are, the government turns their back on these folks. And like Hector was saying, the women veterans, they have it hard here. So can you imagine what's happened to our sisters, you know, in these foreign countries, that they're not getting anything? After I read you this article, you know, it'll just make you think, you know, what's going on with these women, you know. I've when somebody comes up and asks me, you know, should my daughter go in the service or so, I say no. You know, I say no, you know. I have a lot of friend women who have been in the service, and I can't think of hardly any that really didn't get harassed, sexually harassed in the service, you know? And to do this to these women, then kick them out of the country, that's just even worse, you know? Because Angie, you know, she was in the service. Arlene, who was on our show before, she was in the service. You know, Colleen Homsteader, she was a nurse in Vietnam, you know? And there's so many more of these women that served in the military, and they were harassed in the service. And that's just really, really not fair. You're listening to Veterans Voice Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, Oregon. And I'm going to have a song played, and this is for my buddy, Joe Lewis. Joe Lewis was a student at Kent State in 1970. And my buddy Joe Lewis was shot by the National Guard in Kent State University. And they shot him in the hip, and they shot him in his ankle. And when they were having the trial back then, these National Guard guys were asked, "Why did you shoot him again?" And the guy said, "Because everybody else was shooting at him." So I'm going to have number five. We're going to play number five. And this is for my buddy Joe Lewis. Survived Kent State. So we're going to go ahead and play it now.
Summer, I hear the drumming for dead
that is for my buddy Joe Lewis, who was shot by the National Guard at Kent in 1970 at Kent State University. And he's a good friend. And I want to talk a little bit about Bergdahl. Bo Bergdahl was a soldier from Idaho, and he was in Afghanistan. And he walked off of his post, and he was captured. For 5 years, he was a prisoner of war and tortured and hurt. But this is stuff's starting to come out about him. And this article was written by Jonathan Drew from the Associated Press. And it starts out, this kid was young. It starts out well before Sergeant Bo Bergdahl walked away from his army post in Afghanistan. He washed out of the Coast Guard 3 weeks into boot camp when he was found on the barracks floor suffering a panic attack, his hands covered in blood from a nosebleed. You know, that was before he even went into the army. He washed out of the Coast Guard. 2 years later, though, he joined the army, obtaining a waiver from rules that bar the enlistment of those with certain psychological problems. The details about his mental health, including the Army's later diagnosis of Bergdahl as suffering from schizopath personality disorder, are contained in newly released documents that offer a glimpse of the legal strategy his lawyers may be using. Bergdahl, 29, was held 5 years by the Taliban and its allies before he was swapped in 2014 for 5 Guantanamo Bay detainees. And of course, they were criticized for trading for him. You know, we never leave anybody behind, is what they say. He is charged not only with desertion, but also with endangering comrades who were sent out to search for him and could get life in prison if convicted at a military trial set to begin this summer. The documents released Wednesday night also include a form from July 25th, showing that an Army Sanity Board evaluation concluded that Bergdahl suffered from schizopal personality disorder when he left his post in Afghanistan. But then they add, however, the Sanity Board said that despite the severe mental disease or defect, Bergdahl was able to understand that his actions in walking away from his unit were wrong. The board also concluded that Bergdahl isn't currently suffering problems, and that would prevent him from standing trials. So they said at the time that they took him into the service, he was having mental problems. He was let go from the Coast Guard before taken into the military. While he was in the military in Afghanistan, he had mental problems. And then the board says he has mental problems, but then they say, when he walked away, he didn't have mental problems. So there's something bad wrong with what they are trying to do to this young man, you know. Why did they take him into the military in the first place, into the Army in the first place, when he was diagnosed with schizopal disease, you know? Because at the time, they didn't have enough people going into the military, and they were in two wars. That's why they took him in. They were in two wars. They were in Afghanistan and they were in Iraq, and they needed bodies. And so they lowered their standards and they took this poor kid into the military. And now they're not supporting him, and they're going to try and put him into prison for the rest of his life when it's their fault that they took him in the first place. You know, there's something bad wrong with that. There's, you know, that is just bad wrong. That kid needs all the help he can get from what they're doing to him. It's just makes me angry, just angry with what they're doing to this young man. I want to play another song before we get going into this article about the women women in the military, and it's so interesting. I want to play number two. It's called I Was Only 19, and this is about Australian soldiers being sent to Vietnam, and we'll talk after the song about our sister veterans.
Mum and Dad and Denny saw the passing out parade at Puckapunyal. It was a long march from cadets. The 6th Battalion was the next to tour, and it was me who drew the card. We did Canungra and Shoalwater before we left. And Townsville lined the footpaths as we marched down to the quay. This clipping from the paper shows us a young and strong and clean. And there's me in me slouch hat with me SLR and greens. God help me. I was only 19. From Buntow riding Chinooks to the dust at Newey Dat, I'd been in and out of choppers now for months. And we made our tents a home, VB and pin-ups on the lockers, and an Asian orange sunset through the scrub. And can you tell me, doctor, why I still can't get to sleep? And night time's just a jungle dark and a barking M16. And what's this rash that comes and goes? Can you tell me what it means? God help me. I was only 19. A 4-week operation when each step could mean your last one on two legs. It was a war within yourself. But you wouldn't let your mates down till they had you dusted off. So you closed your eyes and thought about something else. And then someone yelled out, contact! And the bloke behind me swore. We hooked in there for hours, then a God Almighty roar. And Frankie kicked a mine the day that mankind kicked the moon. God help me. He was going home in June. I can still see Frankie drinking tinnies in the Grand Hotel on a 36-hour rec leave in Buntow. And I can still hear Frankie lying screaming in the jungle till the morphine came and killed the bloody row. And the Anzac legends didn't mention mud and blood and tears. And the stories that my father told me never seemed quite real. I caught some pieces in my back that I didn't even feel. God help me. I was only 19. And can you tell me, doctor, why I still can't get to sleep? And why the Channel 7 chopper chills me to my feet? And what's this rash that comes and goes? Can you tell me what it means? God help me. I was only 19.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's the average age of a soldier in Vietnam was 19. And so even though that was a story about Australian veterans, it definitely with American veterans also. And so this article I'm going to read you now is from Disabled American Veterans magazine that I get every month. And One in five women enrolled in Veteran Administration screened positive for military sexual trauma. Women veterans played a significant role in the Vietnam conflict, yet so many of them don't know or understand what types of benefits and support systems there are. Vietnam-era women veterans, the unknown trauma. Study shows women veterans from the Vietnam era are at increased risk for post-traumatic stress disorder. And this was written by Mary Deaver. There were approximately 265,000 women who served in the U.S. military during the Vietnam War, with nearly 11,000 serving in parts of Southeast Asia. My mouth's really dry, sorry. A new study is showing that lingering psychological effects their service has caused. According to post-traumatic stress disorder in Vietnam-era women veterans, the Health of Vietnam-era Women Study, published in JAMA Psychiatry, a publication of the Journal of the American Medical Association, these women veterans suffer significant rates of post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, decades after the war, partly because of the sexual harassment and discrimination they faced. At that time in the Women's Army Corps, we were taught to be ladies first and soldiers second, says Carmen Bennett, an Army soldier who served in a clerical position during the Vietnam War from 67 to 68. It was different then. We didn't know what was considered rape, and so that caused a lot of guilt. So she served in country in Vietnam. That really, Bennett was raped on August 24th, 1968. The assault resulted in a pregnancy, which forced her out of the service. That really killed me, Bennett said. My parents and my family were so disappointed in me. I carried around the guilt and shame for a very long time. I still carry it. The study funded by the Department of Veterans Affairs is based on surveys and phone interviews of more than 4,000 Vietnam-era female veterans. Vietnam service significantly increased the odds of post-traumatic stress disorder relative to U.S. service. This effect appears to be related to wartime exposure, especially sexual discrimination or harassment and job performance pressures, the study concludes. According to the VA, women veterans who use VA health care and report a history of sexual trauma while in the military also report a range of negative outcomes, including poorer psychological and physical health, more readjustment problems following discharge, and a greater incidence of unemployment due to mental health problems. Though she lived with the symptoms of PTSD, it was a long time before Bennett was formally diagnosed. Every year on the anniversary of my trauma of August 24th and 25th, I was on the phone with my friend who went through it with me. I was stuck, said Bennett. I went through a lot of emotional trauma and guilt and everything. I had a lot of tears. I did a lot of crazy things. It changed me dramatically in a lot of ways that weren't good. Bennett sought help through DAV, Disabled American Veterans. It was then, 40 years after her assault, that she started therapy for post-traumatic stress disorder and military sexual trauma. It wasn't until my DAV service officer told me he had seen in some of my records that there were some things that made him concerned, and he thought that maybe I should be checked out for post-traumatic stress disorder. I went through a lot with my family. They disowned me. It really hurt. It broke my heart, she added. But now I'm thinking my PTSD played a huge part in the way they acted towards me. I think the PTSD played a big role in my life. In 2010, Bennett was awarded 100% service-connected disability for post-traumatic stress based on the trauma she endured in 1968. It took 42 years of quietly suffering before someone finally recognized her disability. Stories like hers are why the VA is making a huge push for additional research and the studies in what Vietnam-era women veterans really endured. In this situation, the veteran had lived with the after effects of her trauma for more than four decades, 40 years, said DAV Assistant National Legislator Ms. Love. Women veterans played a significant role in the Vietnam conflict, yet so many of them don't know or understand what types of benefits and support systems are available. According to the National Center for PTSD, given the alarming prevalence rates of sexual harassment and sexual assault among military veterans, VA has responded actively to meet the health care needs of veterans impacted by these experiences. Military sexual trauma screening and related services are mandated to be available to every VA medical center for both men and women. Women Veterans, The Long Journey Home, DAV's comprehensive study of the many challenges women face, reports that one in five women enrolled in the VA screening tested positive for military sexual trauma. The Vietnam-era women's study shines the light on what has been a little examined part of the nation's experience in the Vietnam War. Well, the study examines not just what women veterans of the Vietnam era were faced with, from military sexual trauma to life and death decisions made by nurses, but how the experiences shaped their life. PTSD is with me, said Bennett. It's never going away. Never going away. She suffered for 40 years with this trauma. And so she, you know, that, I'm really not happy about it, you know. I know that the VA up here on the hill in Portland has a clinic for the female veterans, and it's staffed by women nurses and women doctors when they can get women doctors, and that that our sister veterans can go and get help. And I can really understand why they would want to be separate, you know, and get the care they deserve from what happened to them in the military. So I'm really, really, really not happy about this. Is this about the house? It's about the house? Okay, we're going to take a call, and then I want to talk some more about my sister veterans. We're going to take a call from Tim, and he was going to tell us about a house for veterans. Hey, Tim, hi. Oh, it's not? Oh, well, let's wait. Can you bring me the information on the house again? No, it's nothing on this. On the back of it, there's nothing about. Oh, I can't find the other one. Oh, here it is. I got it. Gray's Landing, located on Southwest Lowell and Bond in the newly developed Southwest Waterfront, has 42 apartments just for vets, just for veterans. It is affordable housing. It's run by REACH. Go to reachcdc.org. Look for Gray's Landing under property listings or call 971-277-7195. And that's for veterans, a newly developed area. And it's affordable housing for veterans. So that's a good thing. And especially after reading what we've listened to this morning and about our sister veterans, you know, when I go back and I think about in Vietnam, you know, one thing I remember, not seeing a lot of women veterans, you know, when I was in Vietnam, except for a nurse. And I remember the helicopter dropped me off in the air base in Pleiku, instead of dropping me off at Camp Inari, which was 4th Division place, and so I had to catch a ride up to Camp Inari. But I remember I was sitting at the airport. I'd been dropped off, and I was sitting there by myself, And across the way was about seven or eight or nine guys sitting around one nurse. She was a nurse. And she was just sitting there with all these guys around her, and she just had this look on her face, you know. And I thought, oh, this is not good. And as I was sitting there, I stood up, and she stood up, and she walked over to me, and we started talking. And I said, are you okay? And she says, well, yeah, I am okay now. And she just seemed so sad, you know. Here she was, you know, she's a nurse. She was taking care of us. She was going through all this trauma over there. And these guys were over harassing her. You know, I remember that this was 1968. And I still remember that happening and to her, you know. And I got my friend Arlene, who was a vet, who'd been on the show with us before, and Colleen Helmstetter, who was a nurse. And I've talked to both of them, you know, about their service in Vietnam. And I've read a lot about this, and it's really, really not a good thing. So I just want to say, you know, we need to take care of our buddies and our sisters and things. And I want to say hello to my friend Dorothy Ackerman, who served in Korean conflict. She is 84, and she's a great person. And I always run into Dorothy up at the VA hospital. And Dorothy Ackerman is a great person. She's so wonderful, and she's just so wonderful. And she's a veteran, and so I just want to say, hey, Dorothy Ackerman. But I want to go play one more song. We're going to have to be going pretty soon. We've only got 7 minutes. And so I'm going to have one more song played. And then I want to tell you guys goodbye, okay? And we're going to play number 7. And then I want to tell you goodbye. So this is a good song, number 7.
To me. Oh,
And that was Edwin Starr, War. And Edwin Starr died, I think, 2 years ago while he was living in England. But he has a great song. We've talked a lot today about some things that I hope that people think about, and we can do something about it. And our brothers and sisters that were deported out of the country, our female veterans who are not getting the care that they deserve to get, and about Bo Bergdahl, who should never have been in the military in the first place, being treated like he was. If you know a female veteran, you know, talk to them and see if you can get them to go to the VA and get into the program. And you'll be back with me next month. And we'll be back on April 15th at 9 a.m. here on KBOO 90.7 FM. And we're going to, and there it is.
At the end of the early British wars, the young land started growing, the young blood started flowing, but I ain't a marching anymore. For I've killed my share of engines in 1,000 different fights. I was there at the little big horn. I heard many men lying, I saw many more a dying, but I ain't a marching anymore. It's always the old to lead us to the wars, always the young to fall. Now look at all we want with a saber and the gun. Tell me, is it worth it all? For I stole California from the Mexican.
And this is KBOO Portland. Time is 9:59 a.m. Coming up is Air Cascadia. Headlines, interviews, and commentary with your host, Chris Andre. And you can help support KBOO Community Radio by donating your car, truck, motorcycle, ATV, motorhome, trailer, boat, or other type of vehicle. Transform your car into resources for unserved and underserved communities, free training, recording equipment, and great programming for all of KBOO's listeners. Donating your vehicle is easy. You just call 877-KBOO-123, 877-526-6123, or check out kboo.fm/vehicle. And while you're at kboo.fm, if you're not already a member of the KBOO Foundation, you click on the little jar in the upper right-hand corner that says Donate Today. Day, and you'll be on your way.